fourth case for argument this morning is Green v. Burge. Mr. O'Brien.
May it please the court. The Wisconsin DNA indexing statute is unconstitutional because it authorizes the Wisconsin Department of Corrections to conduct warrantless, suspicionless searches against qualified inmates. The searches are conducted to collect DNA samples in the form of a biological specimen, either through saliva samples or blood samples. The samples are then analyzed, and then a DNA analysis is then conducted, and the samples are subsequently stored into a DNA data bank.
Mr. O'Brien, let me tell you what my major question is with your position. It is, what's wrong with warrantless, suspicionless searches of prisoners? Prisons do it all the time.
True.
They search, they shake down their cells, they conduct body cavity searches, which the Supreme Court has held can be done randomly. I mean, why is it okay to have a warrantless, suspicionless body cavity search of a prisoner, but not okay to put a cotton swab in their mouth?
Upon incarceration, a prisoner does lose substantial constitutional rights under the Fourth Amendment. They lose the right of privacy to the contents of their cell and their surroundings. They further, with respect to body cavity searches, those searches are generally conducted for the purpose of penological interest, which serve to protect the safety of prison staff as well as the safety of other inmates and the inmates itself.
How is this different, for instance, from fingerprinting prisoners? Is a cheek swab more intrusive, do you believe, than fingerprinting someone?
Yes. Fingerprints do not, there's no search involved with regard to taking someone's fingerprints. They are an external feature to the body. However, a oral swab of the cheek involves a bodily intrusion, as well as the second phase of the search is subsequently analyzed, which also constitutes the search.
Fingerprinting because the fingers are on the, I mean, because the skin is on the outside of the body, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
I mean, you're touching the body, surely.
Right. Fingerprints do not involve a bodily intrusion, which is
they involve a seizure. You take the person, you physically grab him, and you force him to give his fingerprints. And when the Supreme Court held that fingerprinting was okay, it said, certainly there's a seizure here, but it's reasonable. And it said the same thing with respect to hair samples, which is, the Supreme Court has also said is fine to collect hair samples. Yeah. Body cavity searches, fingerprints, hair samples, but not cotton swabs? I mean, it'd be awfully hard to understand a Fourth Amendment that worked that way, wouldn't it?
Well, the searches at issue involved not only cotton swabs of the saliva, but also blood extraction from the body.
Yeah, and the prisons also extract urine. Test that frequently, too. Actually, my bet is prisons extract blood frequently since they're responsible for the prisoner's health care and need to find out whether they have AIDS or diabetes or and so on.
So
in fact, if they're not routinely extracting blood from the prisoners, they're probably violating the Eighth Amendment.
The searches here were conducted for the express purpose of being stored into a DNA data bank, which is used to, for as an aid to law enforcement agencies throughout the state and throughout the country. The purpose was to gather evidence of criminal wrongdoing, as opposed to taking a blood test for determining whether or not a person has AIDS.
Isn't that a standard use of collecting and testing urine to figure out whether they're engaged in criminal wrongdoing, such as using illegal drugs smuggled into the prison. That's also, by the way, why there are body cavity searches, to see whether they are engaged in either smuggling or trying to secret drugs or other things inside the prison. It's for law enforcement purposes. It's held perfectly lawful.
With regard to sneaking in drugs, it's more of an interest of a prison security and not necessarily used to prosecute the individual for criminal wrongdoing. They are conducted for the purpose of law enforcement. They are stored into the data bank for the purpose of solving crime, past and future crime, crimes yet to be committed, and they do not meet the special needs test under the Edmund and Ferguson has recently decided by the.
No, but the reason we're asking is that certainly I assume Judge Rovner, these aren't free people. Right. Edmunds has to do with the rights of free people, and we are here concerned with the rights of prisoners.
Prisoners retain some privacy, expectation
not
of
not
privacy under the Fourth Amendment.
Not very much.
But they do.
The Supreme Court said in a case that you actually neither side cites, and I quote from Hudson against Palmer, "The Fourth Amendment proscription against unreasonable searches does not apply within the confines of the prison cell." Now, that's about as broad a statement as one could imagine, that principles like those in Edmunds just don't apply inside prisons.
I believe Hudson v. Palmer included a search of the prisoner's actual cell. They do, however, require some privacy interests with regard to their bodily integrity. In the body of the prisoner.
Now, let me ask you a question that doesn't have much to do with the legal issues, but more with the policy concern here. Most of the, activity on the DNA front lately has been to exonerate people who were wrongly convicted of something. Why, on a policy standpoint, would it make any sense for someone to not, or a group of people not to think it's a good idea to have their DNA recorded someplace because they could quickly be exonerated for something that they didn't do?
In the situation of being exonerated from a crime, inmates would most likely volunteer their DNA sample.
Green is doubtless worried that his DNA will exonerate Smith and inculpate him.
Well, the primary purpose of this statute was to match DNA samples stored in the database against DNA.
And matching has the characteristics of exonerating people who might be wrongly accused and inculpating the people who actually did it. Fingerprints do much the same service. Now, of course, the implication is that your client is afraid that somebody else's exoneration will come at his expense.
Not necessarily. We have a search that was not conducted with based on any suspicion whatsoever. DNA is extracted from the body. And it does not fit within the special needs exception of Edmund v. Ferguson, or N. Ferguson. The primary purpose is designed to serve the ordinary law enforcement needs. Put that also down.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Mr. O'Brien. No, the other Mr. O'Brien. We will call you O'Brien 2.
O'Brien 2. Thank you. May it please the court. The Wisconsin statutes, as do the statutes of all 50 states and an act of Congress, authorize minimally intrusive searches of incarcerated felons for the best and most neutral evidence of their identities. The plaintiffs say that is unreasonable. We disagree. There's no dispute, really, that prisoners lose virtually all expectation of privacy in their identities. As you pointed out, Judge Easterbrook, they lose their expectation of privacy in general to a great degree, not entirely, but to a great degree. We would submit they have virtually no expectation of privacy in evidence of their identities.
Do you see any problem at all with the fact that the district court never required you to articulate any special need?
Well, the district court was relying on its earlier published precedent, Denny v. Goodmanson, which found a special need. And, you know, the district court did not see any change in the law at the time this case was docketed, and so felt it was free. Judge Crabb, who authored the Denny v. Goodmanson case and the Williams v. Berge case, which was attached to her decision in this case, both found a special need, and therefore she saw no need to further elaborate on it. Certainly, being the respondent in that, being counsel for the respondent in that case, I might have preferred to have the opportunity to develop that argument rather than do it for the first instance in this court. However, that is the reason why she did as she did. There was discussion in the argument of my opponent regarding fingerprints. The fact is, there is no dispute that law enforcement authorities may take fingerprints with or without suspicion of arrestees, of suspects, of incarcerated individuals, of probationers and parolees. There is no dispute that the intrusion of taking an oral swab or a pinprick of a fingerprint is scantily more than the intrusion of grabbing someone's finger, sticking it on a pile of ink, and then sticking it on a piece of paper to maintain a permanent record of that fingerprint. Yet the plaintiffs would argue that while we can take their fingerprints, we cannot take their genetic fingerprints, which are even more conclusive evidence of their identity than the ink fingerprint. That, I would suggest, that the taking of the pinprick or the oral swab here is reasonable, and that the plaintiff's argument that you can take the fingerprint but not the genetic fingerprint is patently unreasonable. There is no dispute that DNA evidence serves compelling state interests. Not only does it exonerate the innocent and conclusively prove guilt, at least when evidence of the perpetrator's identity is the central issue in dispute, not only does it assist criminal investigations, not only does it overcome errors and omissions in criminal investigations and in criminal trials, it ultimately serves to enhance the integrity, the accuracy, and the reliability of the criminal investigation, criminal prosecution, and criminal trial process. That, I would suggest, is a special need beyond any dispute. It is a special need that didn't even exist 20 years ago.
Do you think DNA evidence conclusively proves guilt?
Well, let's put it this way. It's as close to conclusive proof of guilt as we have ever had.
What if somebody plants your DNA evidence?
There is that risk. There is also still the risk of errors in the crime lab. We don't dispute that.
Did you want to finish?
Well, all I can say is that in comparison with other evidence of identity that we've used historically, this is by far and away the best.
Do you find it at all problematic that the special need that's alleged in the brief is to assist an investigation of past and future crimes? Because really, what does that have to do with the administration of prisons? Doesn't it serve, you know, sort of general law enforcement purposes rather than penological purposes?
Well, I would suggest it does to that extent, but it also serves penological purposes in the same way probation and parolee searches serve penological interests to protect against recidivism and to deter future misconduct in that these prisoners know that there is now a record of their DNA. Therefore, when they are released, or even while they're still incarcerated, if they commit any crime that might, where they might leave saliva, blood, urine, or semen, whatnot, they run a great risk of being detected. Whereas in the past, before DNA evidence, they might feel free to go out and offend again. And so to that extent, there is still a connection to a penological corrections objective, in addition to the great purpose of enhancing, improving the entire criminal justice system by enhancing the integrity, the reliability, and the accuracy of the evidence of identity. And again, at bottom, all we're talking about is obtaining evidence of a prisoner's identity. We get that through fingerprints. We get that through photographs. We get that through identification cards. We get that through whatever evidence those prisoners carry in their wallet. There's no one challenges the ability of the state to take that evidence. Why should even better evidence of the identity of the person be restricted and be held unreasonable to be taken by the state? And unless there are no further questions, I'll conclude my argument.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Mr. O'Brien, anything further?
Briefly. As counsel just demonstrated, the special need asserted by the state, there's no other purpose than to aid law enforcement. You just went through the laundry list there, and everyone related to the, to solving fast and future crimes. The fact that it may or may not deter recidivism is was not asserted by, at the district court level. It's not clear from the face of the language of the statute that its primary purpose of the statute was to deter recidivism. And the district court also found that the ultimate purpose of the statute was to serve law enforcement needs. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. O'Brien. And Mr. O'Brien, we appreciate your willingness to, and that of your law firm, to accept the appointment. You've been of assistance to both your client and to the court. Thank you very much.
Thank you.